We are here. You are here. You are listening to Colette and Matt have entered the chat. A member of the HyperX Podcast Network here to tell you that this country is under assault from nonstop video game news and announcements, trailers and teasers. OMG.
I was like, wait, week. Who are you?
Who is it? Wait, what happened? Radio, this country.
No. Oh my God, I would have been so upset. That's like I can imagine that as like a true nightmare. Like people are like, Colette, you watch horror movies all the time. What are you afraid of? I'm like, coming onto the podcast for episode 109 and having Matt Silverman suddenly turn into like, I don't know, Rush Limbaugh.
Rush Limbaugh. Listen, this is what gets me angry about the libs.
God.
Here's what I'm worried about. No matter how many American flags I put on my pickup truck, democracy is not improving in this country. What the hell?
Wow, that should be on a t-shirt. Are those American flag stickers on your truck helping democracy? How's that going for you? How's that working out for you?
Oh, don't get me started. We can talk about the co-opting of freedom language into conservative values another time. But anyway, we're here to talk about the obscene amount of video game news and trailer. New games, right? There's always
obscene
stuff.
Obscene. And not only that, but I was observing as we were getting ready to start recording here, which, by the way, for listeners, we normally record before Friday and release it on Friday. But today we're recording on Friday morning to release it today. Mm-hmm. And as we're recording, like a shit ton of news is like pouring out of Tokyo Game Show. And I'm like, we can't possibly like, I was like, wait a minute, the Xbox like showcase was what, yesterday or the day before? And then today is like, oh, like today we have like everything coming out of, you know, like Capcom and everything. And I'm like, oh fuck no, we're never going to be able to keep up with all this. So let's just say that obviously we're here to talk about what we have seen, and that us being two human beings that have other lives outside of games, believe it or not, have maybe not seen everything. So if we miss something really cool, please take to the Discord and tell us that we missed it so we can go find it.
Yep. Perfect. We can't see it all. We can't talk about it all, but we have plucked out the items of interest that have piqued our interest or that might be most relevant to our listening community. So without further ado, shall we get into the news?
Get in it.
Nintendo Direct. September 2022 was earlier this week, Tuesday, probably, I think. And, we had some anticipation about what may or may not be in this. And there was some stuff. Do you like farming?
I'll be honest with you. You ever had a moment in your life, pretty sure that people listening will say, yes, I have, where something happens, maybe you're at a party and you see an incredibly attractive person across the room and everything else just kind of like fades to gray. You know what I mean? Like when something happens and like everything else just doesn't matter anymore.
Uh-huh. Go on.
Breath of the Wild 2 versus everything. That's my experience only.
Wow. You're going straight for the end of the show here. Tell us more.
I'm just saying that's kind of... Well, okay. As an aside, which I actually told the Discord when it was happening, I had a really important meeting with my boss at the exact hour.
Oh, that's right.
And I was like, okay, fine. You know, and clearly I had some other things in my mind. Ooh. So I was like, okay, not worried about that. But yeah, so then like I come out and everybody's like, oh my God. And I'm like, haven't watched anything yet. And also I have to go do some other work. I cannot like go watch.
It's so stupid that we live in this world of like, oh, I have to watch this big news item like an hour later than it happened in real time. wow, that's the worst thing ever. Like,
right.
Our brain, our FOMO brains are so broken around this stuff. But then the counterpoint.
Well, I didn't feel FOMO. It wasn't that. It was just, okay. You know, I wished I could have watched it on, you know, like when it was happening, because it's very exciting to me.
That's what I mean. But, it's, you know, fun. I mean, it's fun to see it in the moment, to know that everyone else that you are with, I think it's just, our social animal brains are like, I want to be with everyone in the room when it happens. And if you're the only one not there, it's a bummer, you know, even though it's all virtual and digital.
Yeah. And when I used to work at the Daily Dot, we actually used to like just basically like be like, no work is going on during this hour. No work.
And
I will not disclose my boss's name, who was the one that put that decree down. But
everyone on the team cared about this thing. So we could all just say at 10 o'clock, that's going to be our lunch. That's going to be our communal lunch break for the day. That's fine.
Right.
That's
cool. We were just like, nah, it doesn't affect
anything. It's fine.
Yeah. And it was nice. It was really, nice that we used to do that. I used to really enjoy it. So, so this year was kind of like, ugh, I didn't get to do it that way. But, you know, I mean, I do think that, you know, regardless, you know, it's just fun to go back. But yeah, for me, my experience, and I also am just like kind of fussy and weird about like Nintendo. Like, I know they make a shit ton of really good stuff, but I mean, I just loved the first game so much, and I've been looking forward to this for so long.
Yeah. Well, so do we want to then zip right to the end of the show, the big reveal?
No, we don't have to, because if you have something in it that you were excited about that I'm just like, yeah, whatever, I don't care, like, you should talk about it. But like, I unfortunately am all about, you know, the money shot. Yeah.
So, all right, well, let's zip through, because did you have any other, did anything else pique your interest from this entire direct?
I don't think I even watched the whole thing.
Oh, interesting.
Like, I think I went back and tried to watch trailers afterwards, but I mean, I just, like I said in the beginning, everything else just kind of got dim.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, so let's zip on through. The show started off with a new Fire Emblem, which is called Fire Emblem Engage,
right?
Which is clearly built in the same engine as Three Houses. And interestingly, I noted right away, like, Three Houses is a wonderful game with amazing characters, story, combat, etc. But all the environments are super gray and boring and drab and, you know, lame textures or whatever. And that was noted when it was released. And it's not really a knock on the game. It's just like, oh, this could have been prettier. And now this game that they showed off is like vibrant and beautiful and very bright. And I have no idea if it takes place before or after or where this is in whatever Fire Emblem timeline. It appears that you can like bring characters from other Fire Emblem games into your party and whatever. And that's kind of like seems to be stretching across the series in ways that fans like, but in short, a good looking Fire Emblem game in the mold of Three Houses, I'm in. I'll do it.
Yeah. It's funny. I tried to play, and I had friends that were just like, "It's just so beautiful. Like, how could you not love, you know, this anime Harry Potter bullshit?" And
I'm just like,
you know, it's really weird. I agree. I just couldn't play it. I don't know why. Like, I just couldn't get deep into it.
And you have said yourself, you're not a tactics oriented person typically.
No, and
speaking.
That's probably part of why.
Sure.
You know.
So yeah, that. So I had jotted down notes during the show, and so hopefully these release dates are accurate or tentative. But that looks like early next year, January perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
So that caught my attention. Briefly, Tunic coming to Switch,
which is great,
and I hope everyone gets to play Tunic who wants to play Tunic. Fingers crossed that it runs well, because like it's, you know, it's a beautiful game, and I think it runs extraordinarily well on PC and on Steam Deck and such, but it's clearly running at 30 frames here, and the video, whatever video capture they showed, did not do it any favors. It looked kind of janky to my eye. Mm. Even the trailer upload later, and people were noticing that. So I hope Tunic appears in all its glory and is not compromised on this platform because it is a spectacular game. Briefly, I will update you and listeners that I am committed to seeing Tunic all the way through. It's been just an insane week or so. And and my daughter's like, yes, I want to play this with you. So I have to, I can't proceed with Tunic on my own accord. I need to make time for her to join in. And so, updates on Tunic will come as we progress.
Yeah. Yeah, but, for sure. And I mean, that's great. It's great. There's no point to rush through it. I think.
No, we don't want to rush.
Especially when you're really enjoying something like this.
But Tunic on Switch coming in late September, the 27th, I have written down here.
A really nice fit, in my opinion, for the Switch.
It's great Switch game. It would be a perfect Switch game if it works. I'm Octopath Traveler 2. I wish it all the best. I am sad, despite everything about me wanting and loving these games, Octopath and Triangle Strategy. They're beautiful. The core gameplay is really great. The battle systems are extremely good and well-polished and thoughtful. I was bored to tears by both of these games, and I'm really disappointed, and it makes me not trust the idea of an Octopath Traveler 2. They're saying, oh, the storylines are intertwined now, which is something that the fans wanted and were disappointed by Octopath. That's fine. That's great. I hope they do it. But if the writing is still boring AF, then I don't know that I'm going to go in on Octopath Traveler 2.
And I'm almost positive that on this show in the past, I talked not only about how disappointed I was, how much I wanted to like Octopath and didn't, but also that my deeper rant about how, you know, Square Enix went to shit when it was no longer Squaresoft. And I'm not going to like reiterate that.
Of course.
Because why? So, I'll leave it at that. You know, I glossed right over it. I really did.
Totally. There's a couple other like big ones here that I wrote down that are important to me. Factorio is coming to Switch, and
I might have missed that completely.
Yeah, I mean, it was so quick in the presentation, but people who know this game and who care about it are really excited about it, and I'm excited about it because Factorio is a game for me. It is a game that I own on Steam, really really enjoyed, but because it's a mouse and keyboard game, I was sort of like, I love this. I'm obsessed with this, but ended up falling away from it because I didn't want to sit at the desk. Then did install it and give it a shot on Steam Deck, and it ran great on Steam Deck, and the controls were mostly fine. And I was like, cool, I could play Factorio on the Steam Deck. And then never went back to it. I think because the controls were okay, not amazing. And I guarantee you there's like 400 community input settings for this game that probably make it great on the Steam Deck.
Yeah.
But the idea of a console-ified Factorio on a much lighter weight, on a much smaller device that I can just Factorio-ize in bed for 1,000 hours... Yeah. If the reviews of this are good, then I will probably get Factorio on the Switch. And that's going to be where I go real hard on Factorio.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's totally awesome. I am really sorry to say that I don't even know what that is.
No, I mean, it's one of those games that we could talk about at length. And maybe you'd be like, oh, you're maybe convincing me. And then, you know, it just may never make it to the top of your personal queue, which I totally understand.
Sure.
In short, it's a factory optimization game. So it's like you can chop this wood and mine this ore, but what if you set up a conveyor belt and an auto chopper to feed the wood and the ore into a little combine that then combines them into another material that then feeds it into the next furnace, which then routes it. And then what if you had 10 furnaces that could do 10x that, and then it routes it into the, and you're constantly expanding and optimizing the automation of your factory, but okay. also every so often you're generating enough pollution where the aliens on this planet that you are on wake up and fuck with you. And so you got to protect the factory as you're expanding it. And it is... it's not really like RimWorld, but if RimWorld didn't have characters or relationships and was distilled down to its core, like
maybe
making stuff,
be like that.
That's what that is. You are just gotcha. Making stuff to make more stuff, to make bigger stuff, to make awesomer stuff, to make bigger things. And it's one of the most well-reviewed games on Steam of all time.
Wow.
And it's just people in the reviews being like, 10,000 hours in, I still,
wow.
this is still good. You know,
that's
one of those. It's one of those games. So
that's yeah. crazy. Awesome. Super awesome.
What else did I write down here? Oh, Mr. Miyamoto-san came up and said that Pikmin 4 is happening.
Yes, of course, which I have never to this day yet played a Pikmin game.
Neither have I. I'm surprised yeah. you have not. I want
yeah,
to.
I'm kind of surprised I haven't either. I would. Right? I would if it was handed to me. But, you know, yeah. I think we can continue to always and forever go back to the overwhelm of too many games, not enough time.
Sure. Sure. But color me very interested. They really did not show much. They kind of showed a still and said, it's Pikmin and it's cute and it's low to the ground and it's coming.
You're like, all those things are true.
In the future. Yeah. So that is there. And then 4,000 farming games, one of which was called Fae Farm, which looked
yes,
really cute.
That one I did watch the trailer for, and yeah. I was like, that looks really cute. But I definitely feel like I am not... I mean, I'm playing a farming game right now, which is another mm-hmm. story altogether, but I mean, I'm not, yeah, I don't feel like I'm going to, there's no farming game right now that I'm like, yeah, I'm going to go do that. Cause I've just ground so many hours into Stardew and into Animal Crossing. And I feel yeah. like I don't have an endless appetite for farming yeah. games, you know, like well, I like them a lot. And if I find the right one and I get in the groove, I'm into it, but yeah.
Yes. Especially potentially inferior farming games, meaning like why my conundrum is why would, and this is bad. It's a bad philosophy, but my sticking point is usually why would I try a worse farming game when I could just play Stardew Valley, which is the best farming
right.
game. You know what I mean? And
well, but I mean, that's arguable, right? Because, you know,
course.
Like every game type, you know, it's like, this is what I now think of as the Netflix phenomenon. It's like yeah. they invent the thing. Everyone wants to do the thing. Let's watch the thing. And then, you know, give it a few years and someone goes, hey, what if we did the thing they did, but then we also added this or we made yep. this like better. And, you know, then the thing's improved and then the originator of the thing is obsolete, which is like a super sad, like if I really think about it, I find like everything about that kind of sad.
Yeah. I mean, it is that innovator's dilemma, which is
yeah,
like, you know,
it really is. It's like,
which
but,
is,
you know,
but, and that's the story of Stardew Valley too, of like Stardew Valley is and was a Harvest Moon, not a clone, because obviously he went way above and beyond. But this is a developer who was like, I love Harvest Moon, this fairly niche, you know, particular type of game. And then he made his love letter to that game.
Right.
Added 1,000 hours of more depth and nuance and art to it. And then everyone on Earth was like, oh, I love this too. I didn't even know I love it, but oh my God, I love it. And that's
yep.
very,
yep.
I love that. I mean, I'm fascinated by it. I can't say I love it. It's just very interesting. It's
always fascinating.
So interesting.
No, it totally is. You're completely right. So, I mean, yeah, I agree with you on one hand, but yeah, just a lot of farming sims. Well, so it'll be interesting to see if people play them or if that gets glutted or what, you know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And to that point, and speaking of Square, Harvestella was on my radar as sort of like, it's a JRPG farming game from Square. Like, I think it's, hopefully I'm not misremembering it, you know, if Final Fantasy was a farming game.
Right.
And
right.
had quests and stuff. And I'm like, okay, I could fuck with that. And then they're like, and here we go. There's a demo on the eShop today. Check it out. And I did not grab it yet, but like early discussions of it that I've been reading are like, it's super boring and doesn't run great. And I'm like, okay, good job, Square, I guess.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see. Yeah.
I think they have a quantity, not quality issue, but that's like an entire podcast there.
It's a bummer. That's really it. Kirby's Return to Dreamland is coming back, and that's, you know, I never played that, so another Kirby game on Switch is never either. A bad thing. Yeah.
And after my last Kirby experience, I've been like, you know what? Need more Kirby in life. Sure. So I'll definitely check that out when it comes out.
Amen. They said February of 2023. That's really it. I jotted down a few other random things. I'll fuck with Switch Sports Golf. We've fallen off Switch Sports, but I'll dig a good multiplayer online golf game. Could be fun to do in a Switch sports environment. So I'm into it. But that leads us to, you know, the moment we were all waiting for, which was some kind of Zelda information reveal something. And then we got this.
Yes. And obviously, you know, it's it's one of those things where it's like, I think it's interesting that they definitely didn't give us a lot, but like, I just think it's, how do I put this? I think it's funny because like, they won't give you a lot, but like, they'll give you enough to where you're like, oh my God, it's real. And then that's like pretty much all
what else? That's all she wrote. And I mean, that's fine.
Right. And I mean, that is exactly, it worked perfectly on me. I was like, that's what I want, you know, like, et cetera. Like, yes, I'll patiently wait for more, blah, blah, blah. Like, yeah. So that's how I feel about that.
But a name, you know, the title is here and the tentative date. I'm not going to hold my breath for that very specific day, but like, we have a horizon now for this game.
Yeah, and that's definitely nice.
It's nice. You know? It's fun. Yeah. Even if it's, you know, because it's not holiday 2023, it is May 2023. And so even if it gets pushed back to like fall 2023, at least you kind of, you know how to plan your life around this, because when this one hits, there ain't nothing else to do with
exactly.
Your day.
Yeah, I know how it went last time, and I'm just like, yeah.
So,
but I mean, it was so pleasant, you know. It was just so pleasant, at least for me.
It looks spectacular. It really looks, you know, I assume it is built in the same engine as Breath of the Wild.
It appears to be.
It looks and feels and seems to control that way. But it looks gorgeous and maybe even polished up from the original, but who can say? The trailer showed that everyone listening has seen this, but it's called Tears of the Kingdom, and my thought about like where are we in the lore, because I guess we've been calling it Breath of the Wild 2 for some time. And I don't know if that's just the community saying this is the sequel, or if it was Nintendo saying this is the sequel or the chronological sequel to this game. And so my lingering question is like, what do we know for sure about when and where this game takes place?
Yeah, I don't think we know, not that I realize that we know a lot. Like, I think there's a lot missing. And I did see some definite people, like, you know, people thinking like, oh, well, you know, could it be like a prequel? Could it be like, what could it be?
Right.
Which, you know, very, very viable. Right. So yeah, I don't know. I don't personally know. I do know that probably no matter what it is, I will be 150% on board.
Oh yeah. I mean, anything can go wrong, but like there's a non-zero percent chance that this will not be a great game. You know what I mean? Like, anything can happen, but this will be an extraordinary experience. If history tells us anything,
Undoubtedly.
So that So any other tidbits from Nintendo Direct that you wanted to hit on with that? The other, it's hard to say disappointment, because like if you're getting hyped up about rumors and then beginning salty that the rumors were not true, then shame on you, shame on us for doing that. But you know, the rumors around Wind Waker and Twilight Princess came from credible sources, and I'm still holding out hope. Like I don't see a business reason why that shouldn't happen. You know what I mean? It's just print money. Give us those games and take our money. Like I don't see a downside to that from Nintendo's point of view. So I presume that they will one day happen still. I hold out hope, but they were not shown here and the world was sad for a moment.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I get it, but you know, at the same time, I can't say I'm particularly disappointed. Yeah. So, you know, life goes on.
Life goes on. Speaking of life goes on, the other big, you know, gaming showcase, I guess, for lack of a better term, these are not conferences anymore. But State of Play for Sony was happening, and they revealed some important updates to certain franchises. But there was something in particular that you wanted to dig in on, I believe.
Yeah, I'm just really excited about PSVR 2. And it's interesting because when we got the first one, my husband was really interested and I had not like clicked with VR yet. And so I played with it and I enjoyed stuff like Moss on it. But, you know, the big sticking point with me about VR all along has been I just wanted to not have the screen door effect. I want to get to the point in, you know, technology where we are wearing lighter headsets that are not, you know, hurting my head and my you know, leaving marks on my eyes, and I want to clearly see the games. And so when I'm seeing, you know, what's out there, what these games are going to look like on VR 2, I'm like, yeah, like fuck you, Oculus. Like I've been waiting for the reason to never have to pick up a Facebook owned device again for VR. Yeah. And this is, in my opinion, definitely it. And so, you know, I thought, well, would I rebuy games that I really love, like Pistol Whip on VR 2, you know, PSVR 2? Yes, I totally would, because I really dislike that much the whole, you know, Meta, Oculus, was Oculus, now Meta, like, you know, Echosphere thing being, you know,
Well, so two quick questions. Actually, two important questions that I know you'll have thoughts on. One is, for those particular games, and maybe for Pistol Whip in particular, can you transfer your... You have invested many hours and you are on like global leaderboards for this game. Can you transfer your account over? Or are you logged in through Oculus or logged in through Steam where you play? Because that's a big... Starting over for you is something.
And I asked Patrick that, and that's absolutely what it is. You are absolutely not going to have access to anything that's on your PC, as far as I know, unless there's something that changes. But I kind of doubt it.
No, that's what I
kind of hope. This is how I kind of see it in my soft mind's eye. You know, this comes, hell yeah, it's the upgrade. We enjoy it for a while. Then I hope that Valve is like, here's the updated Index. It does everything. It's wireless. It looks better than PSVR 2. And then I go, hell yeah. And I buy that. That's my biggest hope.
You never want to put all of your hopes and dreams on a single company making a single thing. But Valve making a wireless headset that is self-contained is the answer to all of these sort of, we don't like Facebook, but there's nothing better problems. I don't see another way forward because, I mean, there's always a way forward. But like, you know, Samsung and HP also make headsets that are really great. I own a Reverb that is made by HP, and it's great. I really like it, but it's still tethered to Steam's ecosystem on a PC to play the game. So the point is, if you just put the Steam ecosystem inside the device, like the Steam Deck did for handheld gaming, that solves everything, as long as it's good and affordable and whatever. And then hopefully that pushes the ball forward for all the other ecosystems and manufacturers to be like, all right, now Sony has their standalone. You don't need a PS5. Here's just the headset, and you can still play PSVR games or versions of them in the Sony headset. Awesome. You're a Sony person. Enjoy the Sony thing. I'm a Valve person. Yeah. I'll get the Valve headset.
I'll get them all. Let's clarify that for a second. I will buy them all because I am, you know, trash when it comes to, you know, video games, A and VR, B.
Perhaps we are rapidly approaching a world where, oh, you have a Nintendo and I have an Xbox and you have a PlayStation. Well, now it's that same world, but like, you have a Sony headset and I have a Valve headset and you have a Nintendo headset and we're all in our camps again and crossplay is disabled and all this bullshit.
Before that goes too far, I just want to like throw one other like, ooh, concept at you just to think about.
Go on.
Total fantasy. Microsoft comes out with a wireless headset that is the lightest and has the best resolution and best specs of anything you've seen so far. And you have full access to all of Game Pass. Anything that's in Game Pass can be translated to, you know, VR, be played in VR. Yes, I said it's a fantasy. It is a fantasy. But like my point being, if you can go beyond, you know, the mythical Index 2 idea or whatever, you know, just from a business standpoint, right? I don't like Meta is literally like bleeding out. Like they are bleeding out in this department. Right. So like, you know, have they made a new headset? The one that's like focused on work? Yes, blah, blah. But I just don't see them being the player to be like, all right, we're bringing in the best new thing that's going to make everybody drop what they're looking at. Like, no, it's just not going to be them. So, I mean, honestly, like, Microsoft has been on a roll. Like,
it is,
you know,
it is them today because there is nothing better, but I think
it won't be for long though. Like, I mean, this is going to kick it out of the water. I think
I really do.
Despite the cord. Cause like, you know, yes, you're corded. Okay, fine. But like, you know, the cord is thinner and lighter and smaller. And like, they don't want to sacrifice the quality of the experience for the lack of cord. And at first I was like, I don't like that. But with time, I feel like I've been like, okay, I'm a little bit more flexible to that than I once was.
Sure. On one hand, it's like, it's not PC VR, which is a fucking disaster of technical garbage. And so it's a console-ified version. So you just plug one cord in and then you're in VR, you turn on your PS5 and you're in it. And that's great. That is the answer to consumer VR. But the problem asterisk that I see at this moment in time is you need a PS5, which is hard to get, expensive as it is, and getting more expensive in certain territories, if I'm sure you saw that news. And then on top of that, you need another device that is almost as expensive as the fucking PlayStation is. And then you got to set it all up and connect the wires and find a place for it under your TV and whatever. And the people like us and yourself, as you've self-described, no problem. I'm fully committed to getting in there and doing that thing because it's awesome.
Right.
Meta Quest 2 still has you beat because for a couple $100, I can walk out of Best Buy and be in VR in 20 minutes.
Right. And you don't need a console. And I think all of that is a big piece. Like they are definitely not making what they're making for the same audience that PSVR is making or what Index is making. And that's fine because there's a lot of different audiences.
Correct.
You know, but I do not think that, you know, Zuck is going to get this to go mainstream no matter how hard he tries. And, you know, I think he's given it, you know, the good college try, as they say. I just don't think it's going to go.
Well, it's interesting. You know? It's like I see it as like, who is going to merge the two audiences, actually? Because hardcore gamers, I'm putting big air quotes, you know, around that stupid phrase, but people who care about games and gameplay experiences and fidelity and whatever, and catalog, to your point about Game Pass and Steam and whatever, We're not prepared to settle for the limitations of Oculus, of MetaQuest, whatever. But MetaQuest is the mainstream adoption key. It is. People are doing VR. People who would never
be doing
sit
VR
down in front of a video game console or a PC are doing VR because MetaQuest 2 is really good. And the 3 is coming out within weeks, I believe, October or something.
But
to your point, that does not speak to the core, the VR enthusiast model. So again, if and when Valve introduces the standalone thing that allows access to the big catalog that the hardcore people care about, but you can still walk out of Best Buy with it and fire it up in 20 minutes, that brings both audiences in and pushes the adoption question forward in a meaningful way that the other two camps do not yet, in my very humble and uneducated opinion.
No, I mean, it's different. You know, to me, all of it is just different. It's just different spaces. And, you know, I don't think revenue is the only measuring stick of success here. You know, I just think it's just going to be a different thing for everybody. Like, and you know, look, I'm never, ever going to diss what an incredible experience I've had, how much fun I've had with the Oculus. And I'm going to call it Oculus because it's been the Oculus for the majority of the time I used it. But I mean, you know, I'm more than ready to just move on to something that, you know, looks better and, you know, does not tether me to, you know, the Facebook Meta universe. And that's coming, and it's by my, you know, longtime favorite developer. So why not, or rather publisher. So like, why, you know, why wouldn't I go the Sony route when I've loved, you know, their products for such a long time?
Right.
I mean, to me, it all makes sense.
And the ecosystem seems to be shaping up. You know, I casually observe that, like, it's not a ton, but it is, you know, like, for example, I pay attention to No Man's Sky because I care about the game. And so they're like, guess what? We have our update and we're adding this, this, and this. And oh, by the way, we've got the PSVR 2 and we are actively developing for it. And we will release the official PSVR 2 version of the game for the next gen. And it will be here. We're committed to it, you know? And so that's just one small example of like, mm-hmm. when you get this device, the mm-hmm. really good experiences will be hopefully be there. And as we know, that's it. That's, you know, that's all that matters at the end of the day. So do you recall what the release date, do they have a release date for PSVR 2? Do we know what that is? I'm just curious about that.
Early 2023, but no day or month.
Okay, so that is
so they're figuring it out, I guess.
Yeah. But yeah, exactly. It looks sexy as hell. Like the controllers, the headset. It's just beautifully designed in the way that Apple products often look, really sleek.
They've done a gorgeous job with it. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's really beautiful.
Cool.
But, you know, we'll see. I mean, all this is, you know, all this is a matter of future discussion that we'll watch evolve as we, you know, do our lovely podcast.
Good.
So,
as you mentioned at the top, Tokyo Game Show is ongoing and, we probably are not going to get into much of it here. The only thing that caught my attention this morning was, and I don't know if this was known or if this was sort of like, surprise, we're doing it, but Suikoden 1 and 2 HD remaster.
Right. That's super cool and not something I think I was necessarily expecting.
No, not expecting it.
I played it a very, 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 very long time ago.
That was my question.
So long ago, to the point to where I don't remember it very well at all. But I do remember that it was so cool because there were so many characters that
stories.
That would come back with this, you know,
for sure. I watched a trailer this morning and the art looks really nice. It feels like it evokes the, you know, the feeling of the original, but is gussied up and, I had only emulated them like on a phone like years ago, because I was like, I would like to play some old school RPGs that I never played because I didn't own this system or that system. Oh, people love Suikoden. And so I was like, I was impressed by it. I liked what I played, but it did not get similar to you. I did not get very far or have very memorable experiences. But yeah, and it seems like it's coming to everything, Switch, PC, all the consoles. So color me interested. But yeah, was there anything else from TGS that caught your attention yet?
I'm actually thinking it makes more sense for us to like get deeper into that next week when we talk, because I see a few things, but I haven't watched the trailers yet. So maybe I'll wait and watch those later. And then there's things we can talk about like next week in more detail. Cause you know, I hate to rush when there's like so much, you know?
I agree. All right. So let's take a break and we will come back with what we have been playing after this big news deluge, right after this.
What's that? Majestically cresting the horizon as it makes its way into port. Why, it's the brand new HyperX Armada monitors, mounts, and arms. Both the HyperX Armada 25 and 27 gaming monitors come bundled with a sturdy HyperX Armada mount and arm. If you need every split second of advantage when gaming, the full HD Armada 25 and its 240Hz refresh rate are for you. If you like to soak in the graphical majesty of your gaming, you'll be eyeing the Quad HD Armada 27 with an 165Hz refresh rate. Set sail for HyperX.com or Amazon.com to start making your display Armada.
We are back to talk about a particular game that we've both been playing, as you may have heard from last week's show. Very special thanks to Mark Lentz of Chuhai Labs for providing us and our listeners with Steam keys for Cursed to Golf, which is just a delight. We'll get into that in a moment. But we will be discussing, we have both now played it. You had dabbled at first. I have spent some time with it. So we'll chat about that. And then we will get to give away three copies to you, our beautiful listeners, in the last segment of the show. So before so stay tuned to find out what happens, to see if you've won. Cliffhangers, what do you call it? Engagement. That's how we keep them hooked. All right. But in the meantime, let me tell you what's happening with this country. In the meantime.
Oh my God.
Have you spent more time with Cursed to Golf since we last spoke?
Yes. I spent a little bit more time with it. I have been playing other things as well. So it's not just the one thing I've been playing. But I mean, you know, still a charming game. And I think that the thing that I came away with most was that this is one of those rare games where I feel really good, like picking it up and playing a little bit and then putting it back down and going to do other things.
Yeah.
Like it just feels like a nice game to be like, I'm going to casually play this.
Yep.
Also, I think one of the things that charms me the most about it, and this is both about the game and about the bigger picture of it being kind of like a, you know, a cool like take on a genre, is that there's something that I just really love, like, you know, about like taking, you know, something like a puzzle-y genre or, you know, a platformer genre or whatever, and mashing that together with like you're golfing, but in hell.
It's so much in the mashup here, which we can pick apart momentarily. I agree with you.
Like it's so creative to me. Like I saw this game yesterday, I think. I get a lot of my news from the Axios newsletter, in case you haven't gathered that by now.
God damn it, I need to subscribe. I keep forgetting to,
it's great.
To get in.
It's really good. But there's this game, and you know, because I have ADHD, I can't remember the stupid name of it. I think it's in my history on my phone, Metal Hellsinger. So it's a first person shooter, but it's a rhythm game. Mm-hmm. So basically it looks like you're in the world of Diablo. Like it's kind of that aesthetic and you are killing things, but you have to kill things to the rhythm of the music, which is death metal. and I was like, okay, like,
yeah. Why not?
This is, it's a, you know, it's a rhythm FPS, you know, yeah. So it's totally, you know, it's totally something that, you know, I've loved, you know, I freaking, you know, love Pistol Whip so much. Yeah. And I was like, oh man, this is so crazy. So, you know, it was on Game Pass and I grabbed it and I was nice. Just like, this, I feel like developers are in a place where they're just feeling braver than ever to just be like,
yeah.
You know, what if we mash like a bakery together with like a dating sim about dungeons and then we put in a sprinkle of, you know, I don't know, like like swordplay, like I, like whatever. It just, this is, it's like they're just mushing together whatever they feel like. And I just think that's cool.
Yes, this is how art progresses, and I'm using progress as a kind of a weird word, and I'm putting an asterisk on it because like it's, there's not really, we shouldn't think of art as like it used to be bad and now it's good, and not as a line, but or evolves is perhaps a better word, because it's like, you know, it's that old adage of like great good artists borrow, great artists steal. Mm-hmm. And I think what you are definitely getting at is like, we can't, as a culture, we can't know that a certain element of the game is good or popular until someone takes a risk and puts it out. And it's like, oh, we love this thing, this innovative thing. So then what if we combine it with all these other things that we also already love? I mean, it goes without saying, but it's the reason the Minecrafts and the Fortnites are what they are, is because right. They merged elements that we've been... They merge the vocabularies of video games historically as an art form into new things. And you, if you're cynical, you could say, oh, that's just a ripoff of this and that old thing was better. But the alchemy of combining the new things into a new form and then putting your own creativity on it, your own aesthetic on it, as Cursed to Golf does. You said that right off the top. That alchemy making it fresh. I mean, clones are clones, and that's right. A whole cottage industry, right. But merging and then refreshing, Stardew Valley being not a clone of Harvest Moon, but an evolution of Harvest Moon.
Right. Yeah. Like, and to go back for a second to Raise to Golf, like, sorry, Curse to Golf. Don't know where Raise came from. To go back to Curse to Golf, another a feeling racing I had.
Game? That's a golf game. That's
you see. Okay, see, now all the mishmashes are in my head. But so I remember that there was a specific era. I guess it was like S for me. It was NES era. But uh-huh. Like, there's a specific era of gaming that I remember where I always like to say it is like games. A lot of games were just weird. And like weird unabashedly and weird. So one memory, yeah, weird and bad, but weird. And I think I was always fascinated with the weirdness. So there was this yeah. game on the Nintendo called Princess Tomato and the Salad Kingdom. Yes. Have you ever heard of this game? Yes. Okay. Such a strange little game.
As you're setting this up, I'm going to say a phrase here. The bottom shelf at Blockbuster is what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
No, not at all. And okay. Me being me, I had to know them. I had to try them all, even ones that weren't something I would normally like.
Hey, so, you man, know, I love it.
I played Princess Tomato in the Salad Kingdom and I was like, this is so weird. And I love it. You know, if you think about it, it's kind of like a, you know, a Zork-esque game, but, you know, you have images, right?
Okay.
You know,
it's not a platformer. It's like a dungeon thing. What is the gameplay of this?
Yeah. So it's kind of, okay. So you know how, you know, Zork, you would type, you know, move, look, yeah, check, yeah, talk, yeah, et cetera. Okay. So imagine that, but instead of having to type it, there are buttons and there's an image in the middle and then you have, you know, your text.
Yeah, so like, and just, you know, just to
it's
see
close.
It, I guess. So Ants, tell me what you think about this. In my mind's eye, Zork was a 3D game. It's a text game, but in my mind's eye, I'm moving forward and backward and turning left and right in 3D space. So for Princess Tomato, is it that, or is it like left to right, sides? No, it's like a three-dimensional image, even though it's not 3D. You know what I mean?
Exactly. So okay. Like, you know, exact same thing, you know, exact same kind of idea, but instead of, you know, just typing go left or go right,
you push,
you know,
the button.
You see a button that says move and you choose move right or move left. Okay. And you have an image, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, so quirky, right? Quirky is the perfect name. Mm-hmm. And when I think about a game like Curse to Golf, I feel like what you have there is the perfect marriage of a very specific time of quirkiness in for me, it's, you know, the Nintendo era, but I'm sure PC players would also say, you know, like, oh yeah, like that was in our era too, right? Sure. Like a certain brand of quirk mixed in with better skills at making games. So not only is it a quirky game that is like, oh, that's so memorable, but it is also a much better made game.
Totally. Yeah, we're in.
And that's exciting, right?
It is. I totally agree. You've summed it up perfectly of like, we have returned to a Wild West where random ass people who are not employed at Nintendo can make whatever game they want and try to see if it will hit in the market. And all the way third-party games were just littering the Blockbuster shelf in that time because it was like, whoa, Nintendo's really popular. Mario is really popular. What if we also made this? And this happened in the Atari days too. There were like tons of like unlicensed third-party bullshit coming out on cartridges that you could just pick up at your local computer store. So we're now with the indie game sort of renaissance or explosion, which has been happening for 10 years or more. We're back there, but you hit it on the head of like, but we're back there and it's crazy, but also games are way better now. So an indie developer has the tools, can pop open Unreal Engine 5 and make an amazing game that isn't jank. It is great. It could be great if the creativity is there.
Right.
That's fucking rad.
It's just rad. I think it's really great. So, and I also think it can be kind of hard to nail a certain feeling of like a specific time in games. Like, I mean, I know when people make 8-bit games, that's what they're going for. But I think there's a difference between looking like that and really nailing it.
I agree.
And I feel like Curse of Golf really nails
it does
a specific time period that I feel very nostalgic about. So it's really... it's really like, I think, a lot of really great things tied kind of, you know, crisscrossing together.
Yeah. I think that's, it's obviously aesthetic and it's beautiful pixel art. It's a beautiful game, but I think what you're getting at is like, there's something about the motion, the animation, the UI and the UX, like cursors and the way when you're about, it's a 2D game and when you're about to hit the ball, you've got meters and you've got, the angle of the shot sort of like courses up and down. So you got to hit it at the right moment. And those mechanics definitely feel mechanical in the way Super Nintendo games of this ilk felt. There's, you know,
yes, it's totally,
there's a vibe and there's an attention to detail with these types of games that either feel like Super Nintendo or they're like, oh, this has 16-bit graphics, but does not feel like a Super Nintendo game. Curse to Golf nails all of it aesthetically and gameplay wise.
Right.
I agree with you.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree. Definitely. It is a lovely game. And in fact, I am excited about the fact that we can share it with a couple of the folks that listen to the podcast, because I'm just excited in general about being able to like help people play good games. Yeah, I just think that's so nice.
That's nice. I agree. So when you first dabbled, I had curiosity questions for you about like, is it a roguelike? Is it a deck builder? You know, because the golf mechanics are the golf mechanics. And so when I dove in, I had a little bit of context from you, which was helpful. And what we have learned since then, you know, it's 2D golf game and you're trying to reach the hole in a certain number of strokes, and then you have cards or abilities that you like the levels are complex. And it's not necessarily a criticism, but my sort of like, whoa, I'm too tired to play this right now. I need to step away was like, all right, tutorial done. I get this game. Let's see, level one. Holy shit, how the hell am I going to get in the hole from... like, the difficulty spike, the difficulty curve feels very steep off the bat. And I was not expecting that. And so I was like, I'm not... my brain is not available for this at this time.
Right,
so I had to come back to it.
Right. But, no, definitely. I noticed that too. And I was like, oh, I was like, they're not going to warm you up slow here.
Right. And so what you have to sort of train your mind to do is be like, there's no way I can get the ball down there in five strokes. Oh, right. Here's a card that can change the trajectory of the ball in midair.
I get to do all this cheating. Here's
the card that lets me cheat.
Because after all, you are in hell. So, you know, things are, you know, the rules of reality are bent.
And that's really fun and helpful and innovative. But what became quickly apparent to me is like, you can't phone in any shot. Every time you're up for a shot, you're like, okay, I need to pick exactly the right club. I need to make sure the angle is perfect. Yep. I need to hit it the right moment. And then I need to also make sure that I'm using the card in the exact right way to get to hit the idle, to get the extra strokes so that because if I do not get down to level, you know, to the third embankment, I'm fucked and I will never complete this course. And so I guess what I'm saying is like, it's a hard game and it requires precision and strategy in a deep way. It's not to your point of like, you can pick it up and put it down in a casual way, but when you are playing, it's not casual. It's cutesy and fun and silly and whatever. And then you step up to the tee and you better fucking get your shit together to play this game because it's hard. And I think that's great. I just was not prepared for that at that moment. Is my only,
you know, I wasn't necessarily either, but I feel like because, you know, they don't slowly warm you up.
No,
they're like, here, figure it out, you know? I think that's a good thing. It might not be a thing for every player, but it's definitely, I think, you know, it's nice to have a challenge because, you know, I think sometimes we forget, you know, we're in this like time period of like, oh, you know, games can be, you know, really hard. You know, there's like this whole like renaissance of like really difficult games. And I think you and I have talked about that, you know, that is true, but also, you know, the really, you know, difficult game thing all kind of started a really long time ago.
Yeah. And comes and goes. And then it's like, well, this game is very difficult, but it also has not this particular game. I'm saying a game in the difficulty discussion has some sort of meta layer or component where it's like, oh, it's really, really hard. But if you do this or that in the background, it's sort of mitigates or, you know, we talked about this with Elden Ring of like, you can get good and try to time your way around this very hard boss, or you can just go somewhere else and work on your magic and, you know, figure out better runes or whatever the fuck for your weapons and come back to this. And those are sliding scales of difficulty and dimension. So the other interesting thing about Curse to Golf, which I have not really spent enough time digging into, but I'm very interested in how this meta layer applies mechanically to the game, is that you get the cards and you buy the cards from a shop. So it is a roguelike or roguelite in that you level one is all the levels are generated. So there are certain parameters around difficulty, but like when you play level one, it's different from level one the last time you did. You know, it mixes up the landscape. And then you also can stop at a shop to get more cards. I think you start with a few cards and then you can buy more cards as you get money on your run. And if you fail, you go back, you start the run again. And what is interesting is that if you, as you learn the game, if you get really good cards, and let's say you have two of a certain card and you're like, oh, this card is really useful to me, to my play style, or this can get me out of a jam, you can go to the shop and you can put that card in a like a card binder, which is really cute. It's kind of like, oh, my, how you'd put like Magic or Pokemon cards in a card binder. Mm-hmm. And the binder, I think, saves the card, keeps it safe for future runs. So you get to level two, you get to level three, and you're like, ah, shit, I blew it, back to the beginning.
Right.
Now I have that card saved, so my next run is, I can overcome something on my next run because I saved this really awesome card that I pulled out of a pack or whatever. And I suspect that strategy layer is very important to getting all the way through. I'm just getting my ass beat by these really tough levels in the early game. And I have not had a chance to really explore that mechanic.
Yeah. Yeah. They are tough. I mean, I do think that you need to be really clever. And I also think that, you know, like a lot of roguelike style games, you know, failing is an important part of the process.
Yes. And I would, so I'm wondering, you know, like Hades, you fail, but you get a currency that allows you to get a little bit better each time. And that forward momentum is as we have discussed at length, is very rewarding and very addictive. This, to my understanding, this really doesn't work that way. It's sort of like you have to make decisions about what to save. And then if you save it and you use it, you blow it on that next run.
Right.
It's not like you upgrade your health or something.
Yeah. Like, and this is such delicate balance. You know, I think I talked a couple weeks ago about Plate Up and how it is a, you know, roguelike cooking game where, you know, you have to survive 15 rounds of restaurant days, you know, with more and more people. I think
speaking of mashups,
Right. But you know, it's interesting because when you lose, you know, you might get access to something new, you might get a new item or whatever, but then like the whole aim is, well, survive 15 days and you can make a franchise. I'm like, okay. So survive 15 days, made a franchise. And then I thought in my brain, oh, I unlocked the franchise. So, but after you unlock the franchise, you can play the franchise that you've made, right?
It's a permanent upgrade or no?
If you die, you lose the fucking franchise.
Yeah, that's is punishing, and I get
felt very punished by that, and I was like, damn man, like can I get like one small, you know? And so I think that, I mean, I have gone back to Plate Up, but I haven't gone back like, you know, the way I went back to Hades. It's such a balance, right? It's such a very careful balance of your brain feeling rewarded by the effort without feeling too frustrated by the difficulty. So I can't say, I feel like I haven't gone far enough in Curse of Golf to be like, yeah, this is too hard. Like, I don't think for me it is at this point.
I have thought a lot about that idea, and perhaps we've discussed it here, but I've come to the conclusion that the reason I love video games, and especially certain kinds of video games, is that in real life, if you fuck up something, you can lose things, meaning you can lose your money if you make a bad decision. You can damage relationships if you are an asshole, whatever.
Right.
But in many kinds of video games, it's like, well, I have gained this experience point, or I have unlocked this ability, or I have acquired this weapon. So even if I blow it on this level or this world or this trial or whatever, I will lose a bit of time because I didn't make it. But I can never lose. No matter what I do, I can't lose this sword. This sword fucking rules.
Yep.
And that, like, you never lose core progress is a reason why video games are better than real life, to say a very stupid phrase. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's why we love them. And so when the occasional game is like, you unlock this cool franchise, now you can do all this cool shit until you die and then it's gone. Fuck you. You were like heartbroken about that because it feels bad.
Yeah. Yeah, it did. It really did. And I had to go, man, you know, but then you have to remember that you have, you know, people that are totally cool with dying hundreds of times in Elden Ring trying to kill one, you know, enemy. And you're like, okay, you know, like this is not across the board. We have to go back to the everyone's different, you know, kind of mindset.
But, and again, I have not yet played Elden Ring myself, but like you lose time when you fight and fight and fight a boss. But to my knowledge, the boss does not steal your experience or steal. No. I get you lose. No.
You can lose your money, but you can go back and get your body. Like,
yes.
You know, so you're not, it is not, in my opinion, the same.
The soulsness of it is sort of the hybrid of that, of those two ideas of like, you have lost something, but you can reclaim it through effort. And that is sort of a hybrid difficulty as opposed to, your sword is gone, your franchise is gone. So anyway, my early perception is like you can, in Curse of Golf, is you can save those cards for the future, but then you can burn them. And then if you lose the game, you're back to square one. I could be incorrect about the meta mechanic. And also with these kinds of games is like, oh, you're at level 5. Good job. Here's a whole new thing that you didn't even know about that's going to let you do other things. Here's a different club or here's a different type of car. We don't know yet. We're still mm-hmm. early on. And so given the quality of this game and experience so far, I expect there to be more cool stuff in the future.
Yeah.
Because the map is big. You know, there's a lot of courses. Or it's 18 holes as a golf course
right.
is.
So right, of course.
There's a lot more to do there.
Right. Definitely. Yeah, I expect to figure out more. And I, only a little bit related, I chose to take next week off just to have a chill out week. And so I expect to be finally catching up with this and many other games that I really want to spend time with.
Yeah, well, I look forward to hearing about them and what's on your list. In the meantime, we're going to take another quick break, but we are going to give out those 3 Steam keys to lucky members of our listening audience. So that they can also enjoy this really charming, delightful game. So stick with us and find out if you are among the winners right after this break. All right, let me tell you a little something about video games. I'm an expert at this, and here's what you have to know. You have to have a computer or you know, a personal computer or a gaming console to you know, do the games, but then you need something to see the games. You have to visually see the video games that you're playing. And great news, HyperX has brand new Armada monitors. Not just monitors, but mounts and arms. Okay, I'm not the kind of person who's gonna pop a monitor on a desk like a caveman. You need to mount it to make it look nice. Both the HyperX Armada 25 and 27 gaming monitors come bundled. It's packaged in with a sturdy HyperX Armada mount and arm. Nice. Let me tell you why these monitors are extra fancy, okay? The Armada 25 has a refresh rate of just, okay, you may want to sit down, 240 hertz. Most video games, you're gonna get 60 on your traditional monitor. 240 hertz. Or if you want something slightly bigger, maybe you want more resolution, we're talking about the Armada 27 Quad HD, which also has got a lot of hertz. 165 hertz refresh rate. That is some serious PC gaming. And also, as we move into next gen, these are monitors that are going to last you for the next gen consoles and your next PC. Get them at HyperX.com or Amazon.com to start making your display Armada. We have returned to give away Curse to Golf, courtesy of Chuhai Labs at Mark Lentz over there, was very kind to provide us with some Steam keys so we could chat about the game and share it with you all. So some of you have entered this giveaway by hopping into our Discord, or you were, of course, already a member of our Discord community. And we have 3 to give away. I have the spinny wheel. So everyone who entered
spinny wheel
is in the system here, and we will spin it in real time and we will announce those winners. So sadly, Colette cannot see the spinny wheel, but I will amp up the drama with maybe if I can get my sound effects working. So are you prepared to spin?
Spinny wheel!
Here we go. We're spinning the wheel on the first Steam key for Curse to Golf. The wheel is spinning. And the winner of...
It is a fun noise.
It is. The winner of the first Steam key is... Honeybrew! Congratulations! I love the spinning wheel because when you win, I can remove you from the pool and then it increases the chances of other entrants. So Honeybrew, love you it. Have won. We will be DMing you that Steam key momentarily. The next winner of Curse to Golf is Space Cowboy. Space_Cowboy. You have won Curse to Golf, courtesy of Chuhai Labs.
Tell me that you are not over there, like, living your best, like, Bob Barker life. Just tell me you're not.
And remember, have your pets spayed and neutered. Good night.
Oh, my God.
All right. Good I'm going to spin the wheel first and then drum roll. So there's no, you know, audio. There's no gap. All right. We can't let these people wait in vain. The final.
No.
The final Steam key for Curse to Golf is going to be awarded to. We're spinning. We're drum rolling. Nose B.
Nose B. So, as I'm singing along to the music,
yes,
my cat Ender is, as he usually is, here by my left hand on the desk. And when I started to sing enthusiastically, he gave me this look, this horrible look.
Like, what the fuck?
Like, I cannot believe.
I'm trying to sleep.
That you are doing this to me. And I was like, listen, I'm sorry, okay? But you weren't fucking there, okay? When this show was great. You weren't right there.
And you know what? Yeah. I think it's we mentioned this. I think it's still great. I haven't seen it in quite a while, but like Drew Carey is a gem, and he's having the time of his life hosting the new Price is Right. And
how could you not? I know it's great. It's great. Have the best time, Drew Carey. The best of times.
Yep. So congratulations to the winners. We hope to do more giveaways like this in the future. So if you're a listener and you haven't yet joined the Discord, hop on in. You can always find the link in the show notes. And as always, we are constantly talking about gaming news announcements and just what we are playing, what we are dabbling in, and sharing those details on the podcast as well. It's a circle of life, if you will, a symbiotic relationship.
Sorry.
you have to do it. we're going to get out of here and get this episode up on the feed. So any final words, thoughts, or hopes and dreams for the future?
I have not had time to talk about this, so I'm just going to let our listenership be like, okay, wow, that's happening.
Yep.
I'm going to go play some more Dreamlight Valley. Yep, I'm close to unlocking Ursula, and I can't wait to be friends with her.
This is Disney's Dreamlight Valley.
It is Disney's take on Animal Crossing, and I'm sure next week we will be talking about it.
So we'll talk more about it there, but briefly, because we were chatting a little bit about it, and I'm just like, I'm morbidly curious. This is mobile or is it on Switch? Where did this end up?
I am playing it on PC, but I think it is on all major consoles. Okay. I'm playing it via Game Pass.
Yes.
It is a $30 game. It is about a 15-hour campaign, from my understanding, if you do the bare minimum.
Okay.
But it is, you know, Animal Crossing with Disney characters. So I have a house and I am making a garden, and I live in Dreamlight Valley, where for whatever reason, I happen to also live with Merlin, Moana, Donald Duck, Daffy Duck, Mickey Mouse, and I am trying to free Ursula so she can come live with me too.
Where is the Disney version of Smash Brothers and multiverses? You know what I mean? Because like just right there, you are naming like so many characters across so many different franchises and IPs, and like, it's so interesting that like Disney never got big on games. They did oh my God, Kingdom Hearts, which, you know, they partnered with Square to make the Kingdom Hearts, you know, the Final Fantasy RPG version of Disney, whatever, and that has its audience. And they're making, and then this game, which is like, what, Animal Crossing sure is popular. What if we had Animal Crossing with Disney characters? Right. Take my money. I get it.
Right.
But like, where are, and there's like a racing game out or coming out, but like, it's very interesting that Amazon is making games and Netflix is making games, but Disney's like, eh, whatever. Well, maybe we'll have a game or two over these past 30 years.
Well, I mean, I think they just have a different approach. I think their eggs are in so many other types of baskets, but I mean, you know, I think for them also, you know, they know that they can make something like this and a gazillion people will play it.
Well, that's what,
you know,
I mean.
Because it's like, oh my God, you know, yeah. Like it's interesting too, because it's, I would say it's easy enough for a younger child to play, but I think it's also fun. I mean, you know, this is absolutely a game made for Disney trash. So like, you know, which I'm actually not Disney trash, but I do love Disney.
But that's what I'm saying of like, you put these IPs into a farming game and boom, print the money. So yeah,
it's nice. It's really nice. Like it's a nice, in my opinion, it's a nice, well-made game. Like I am enjoying it. It doesn't feel like a cheap, quick take. It feels like they finessed it, you know?
Yeah. So it is just curious that more of that doesn't exist. And I think as the IP owners and streaming platforms heat up and get into the space, it would be interesting to note if Disney follows along or, like you said, does their own thing in a different way.
There's actually a story that I read sometime last year. I'll find the link to it. It's called something along the lines of like how Disney conquered the game industry by quitting the game industry, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. And I haven't read it in a while, but I remember it being super interesting. So I'll have to dig it up and find it. But, you know, I think, you know, when, you know, your properties literally print money.
Yeah.
You know, their whole empire is built on something that doesn't have anything to do with games. So it's like, it's just for them, like, it's just a side thing.
Yeah, yeah, but the games industry is as big or bigger. I maybe it's not as big as movies and TV yet, but like they're arguably leaving billions of dollars on the table by not making Mickey Mouse games. And like, you know, here's the thing. Also, we're probably being ignorant. There's probably 400,000 mobile Frozen games. You know what I mean? Like
there are. Yeah, no, there are a lot of things. I mean, this could be an entire episode by itself.
Yeah,
like
right. So there are a lot of things that we don't play or care about. So us saying like, where's the open world Mickey Mouse RPG? Like maybe that's a dumbass thing to say, a dumb question because they don't need to make that to make billions of dollars on their IPs in games. Yeah.
No. Okay. And I mean, I cover them at work, which as you know, our listeners know, I have a businessy job and, their focus in my opinion is always going to be first and foremost on animation. And then I think a very, very, very close second in the parks. That's where the money is.
Oh yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, do you know how much people are paying to go spend two nights at their new like Star Wars experience that is like basically being on a ship?
I sure do. Not that specific. We recently have been scoping out and specking out like what it would cost and take to go to Disney World in Florida with the kids this winter. And we did the math and we're like, what the fuck? We could go to Hawaii instead. We could fly to Hawaii and spend a week in Hawaii for far less than it would cost to spend 3 days in Disney World. And we're like, fuck this.
Okay. So on that note, and after this, I will stop talking because we all have things to go do. Two nights in the
Galaxy's Edge.
Star Cruiser.
Star Cruiser.
Is, and I think this is for two people. I don't know if it's for a family. Mm. Anyway, $5,000. Two nights, $5,000.
And look.
Sit on that, if you will.
I understand if there is some sort of like premium, supreme, highest end, rich people only, fanatics only tier of Disney World for Jeff Bezos or whoever the fuck. Fine, that sucks, but okay, it exists. But I'm more incensed by, hey, I would like to bring a family of four to Disney World for a couple of days and just have fun in the parks. What that might be a couple thousand dollars, right? No, it's $12,000 to do that, not including airfare, not including food or anything else. How do normal people go to this place?
Yeah. And then you look at Galactic Star Cruiser's booking and it's booked out for like months.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
So do you think Disney cares about making a fucking video game? No.
But they could they can do both. You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, yeah, they
why
could,
would
but...
they have a streaming service when they could sell DVDs? Why would they have a theme park when they could have movies in the theater? Like, they need and should and can and do all the things. I guess what I think is happening is that our IP is for kids. Where do kids play video games? On tablets and phones. Boom. We're going to make a bajillion dollars on mobile. We don't need to have a PlayStation 5 game.
No, but I mean, you know, you have to remember that they've also done, you know, I mean, think about, you know, playing Aladdin and The Lion King and all that on SNES.
Right,
it's
exactly.
Not like they haven't noodled around
in
there.
So that's what I'm saying is like, where are those games today? Where are the 2022 versions of those games? It's just fascinating that they don't really exist.
Well,
too much.
I mean, Frozen was turned into, if I'm not mistaken, a lot of the properties that have been more famous in recent years have become mobile titles.
Mobile. Sure.
There was a Frozen Match 3.
Yes, for sure.
Quite a while ago when the game came out, but like they're, yeah. So, I mean, they're around, but yeah, I mean, the whole thing, to be honest, is really, really interesting.
It's fascinating.
But yeah,
someone had a spreadsheet at Disney and said, well, we could spend $10 million making an open world Olaf Frozen game for PS4, or we could spend $20,000 to make this mobile Match 3, and which one will make us more money? And
right.
And I'm making up bullshit numbers here, but like the spreadsheet told you which one is a better deal, and that I get it. Okay. We're here.
Yep. It's a lot of things to think about, no doubt.
All right. But so update us on this Disney Animal Crossing in the next episode in the coming weeks. And please enjoy Curse to Golf if you have won. We will be messaging you shortly. And we love you. And we'll talk at you next week.
Bye.